Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from international journals, clinical articles, and the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Home Study Education Program. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said for her perspective on topics related to women's health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track 3 features an interview with our special guest who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, July 2003. This month, I'd like to conclude my discussion on the human skeletal system. In part one of last month's clinical review, I reviewed skeletal anatomy and the actual composition of bone. We learned that healthy, strong bones depend on much more than just calcium. Bone tissue is very much alive and depends on hydration, high-quality protein intake, and a wide assortment of vitamins, minerals, and trace elements. I also talked about hormones that regulate bone remodeling and the importance of weight-bearing exercise. I reinforced the fact that medical experts all over the world endorse strength training for children, especially for pre-adolescent girls who, with proper instruction and guidance, can increase their bone mineral density at a young age through weightlifting and good nutrition. This approach keeps their bone bank solid, built up over the years, helps prevent osteoporosis, and osteoporosis, which is known as the silent epidemic, affects more than 10% of the population. When you think about it, it's no wonder osteoporosis is so prevalent, as the average North American adult drinks too much alcohol, smokes too many cigarettes, and eats too much refined food. Heavy metals and acids and many medications cause extensive bone loss. The consumption of high-fat protein, damaged by extended exposure to heat and high temperature, excessive salt, and even drinking cow's milk, all contribute to a fragile and weak skeleton. The average diet is just too acidic and lacks the building blocks required to assemble a matrix of healthy, strong cells throughout the body. So what's the number one risk factor? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's inactivity. As we age without any anabolic opposition, bones start to demineralize around the age of 30. In women, this process accelerates as estrogen levels decrease. Protein synthesis also declines if the bones are not placed under mechanical stress. Swimming, cycling, running, dancing, and aerobics are fine for improving heart and lung capacity, and many sports provide excellent recreational enjoyment. But aerobic exercise alone provides minimal growth stimulation, as the mechanical pull of muscle attached to bone is almost always countered by cortisol elevation, a decline in testosterone, and massive oxidative stress caused by breathing in high volumes of oxygen. So you do a lot of aerobics, you breathe a lot of oxygen, and it degrades lean mass. It doesn't build it up. One thing is for certain. Different types of exercise cause different effects on bone remodeling, and resistance exercise is by far more important than endurance exercise for reducing bone loss. In fact, many long-distance runners and aerobic athletes either lose bone density at an accelerated rate or become susceptible to bone fracture and joint erosion. A high volume of aerobic activity alone, by nature, is catabolic, not only to fat reserves, it does reduce body fat, but it also eats up muscle and reduces bone mass. A lot of people don't know that. A shuttlecraft moving quickly through the atmosphere is always susceptible to damage and erosion caused by friction and oxidative stress. So if you run and do a lot of aerobic activity continuously, it's kind of like a friction on the body. And without the anabolic stimulus of weight training, you won't have anything to counter the influence of oxidation, which increases by breathing more oxygen as you increase the activity, like dancing or swimming or cycling. In general, aerobic activities simply do not provide enough gravitational load on the body to oppose or counter the catabolic effects they impose. For example, the average NHL hockey player loses between 8 to 12 pounds of lean mass by the end of the regular season. Travel, jet lag, chronic sleep deprivation, and the effects of mental and emotional stress, coupled with playing the game itself, simply do not add up to the accretion of lean mass. This is why some professional hockey players take steroids. Not so much for building large, bulky muscle, but for improving their ability to cope with the caustic effects of oxidation on the ice, impact injuries, and playing an 80-game schedule. Skeletal tissue adapts to meet the strain of mechanical load and weight-bearing exercise. Any bone strain that exceeds the minimum strain for remodeling, which involves changes in skeletal architecture and bone mass to keep a bone's strain capacity below the threshold of microdamage, results in a net increase in bone. However, strenuous training in the absence of optimum nutrition can negatively affect female sex hormone chemistry, which counters the benefits of osteogenic stimulation. Many women who participate in competitive endurance sports, especially running, often experience abnormalities in menstrual cycles due to low plasma levels of estradiol. Amenorrhea is the absence or abnormal cessation of the menses. Amenorrheic athletes can have a higher risk of accelerated bone loss or fracture than non-athletes with normal menstrual function, even with the advantages of weight-bearing exercise. The lumbar spine is especially at risk. When performed without adequate nutritional supply and antioxidant reinforcement, strenuous and repetitive routine training eventually causes organ depletion, adrenal exhaustion, loss of lean mass, and damage throughout the whole body. If you have a strong constitution, it just simply takes longer. There's an old parable that says, "Don't muzzle an ox while it's treading out the corn." What this means is that we should supply our biological demands and not limit our performance through dietary restriction. For athletes, it also means we should take special precaution and make sure we nourish ourselves before, during, and after exercise or competition. In this case, I'm referring to hydration, electrolyte, and antioxidant therapy. Although low levels of body fat are common in the amenorrheic female athletic model, inappropriate dietary patterns that limit or restrict food intake well below that which is essential to the economy of the body are more often the cause of menstrual disturbance and estrogen deficiency than the effects of training or the low levels of body fat, provided the athlete is drug-free. If not, then the effects of diuretics, anabolics, amphetamines, and medication must be considered. Many athletic and non-athletic women rush into weight loss programs without consideration given to the detrimental effects of such a hurried approach. Such programs often include a fanatical approach to exercise, the too much too soon scenario, or include the outdated approach of emphasizing cardio with little or no emphasis given to resistance training. Moving from one extreme to the other is inconsistent with wellness and long-term health. Living in the extreme as a permanent resident, as opposed to finding balance in the centered middle path approach to living, is a setup for disaster. The smart athlete plans ahead and approaches weight management with health and the rules of science in mind. Organized planning and patience is fundamental to success. First, body weight is reorganized in the mind as a function of mass and body composition. The objective is to preserve lean mass and regulate body fat through the management of food and training, both of which depend on motivation and discipline. The practice of chronic under-eating to maintain low body weight inadvertently reduces one's intake of essential minerals, protein, and essential fatty acids. Exercise and physical activity increases rather than decreases the need for high-quality, micronutrient-dense, mineral-rich food. In my experience, normal menstrual cycles reappear and estrogen levels return to normal when micronutrient and energy deficiencies are corrected by improved diet and supplementation. In a study titled Effects of Training Mode and Calcium Intake on Bone Mineral Density in Female Master Cyclists, Runners, and Non-Athletes, greater bone mineral density values were observed in young female athletes involved in impact loading sports like volleyball or gymnastics compared to active loading sports like swimming. The same was also true in high strain rate sports such as squash or high peak stress sports like Olympic lifting versus sports involving a large number of lower force repetitions like cross-country skiing or cycling. Women with a long history of training who competed in impact loading sports such as netball and field hockey had greater whole body and regional leg bone mineral density than women involved in either non-impact sport training or a sedentary lifestyle. This study is from the International Journal of Sports Nutrition and Exercise Metabolism, 2000, Volume 10, Number 3, page 292-301. The key is to combine weight-bearing resistance training with cardio and skill training, which is exactly why athletes now homogenize their sport both in and out of season with power training and core development exercise. This approach is proven to retain muscle and bone strength throughout the course of the athlete's career and for most of their lifespan, provided they keep it up. Research has also shown that free radicals are involved in excessive leaching of bone calcium. Keeping antioxidants high and oxidative stress low can help protect the skeletal structure. Antioxidant protection is fundamental to any good nutrition and supplement program. Always emphasize a mixed approach that includes both water and fat-soluble antioxidant nutrients, like vitamin C and vitamin E, for example. The force of gravity affects bone mineral deposition and resorption. It is not uncommon for astronauts in space or bedridden women in hospitals, for example, to lose as much as 10 to 40% of calcium from their bone matrix. So again, we're reminded that inactivity, laying around, being a couch potato, creates an environment that leads to the extraction of calcium out of your bones. And so they get weaker and weaker as you get older, and they become susceptible to fracture and damage. They literally cave in as we get older if we don't take care of them. Minerals are poorly absorbed without muscular compression. So you can take lots of minerals, and without the training, you're still not going to get the value. You need muscle to compress the bone, and muscle strength is highly correlated with bone mass at all ages. The stronger you are as you age, the more dense your bones are going to be, and vice versa. We can do a bone mineral density test, and that person at the age of 80, we know is going to have some muscle mass because that's how they're maintaining their bone mass, is by contracting their muscle through exercise and training. It's really one of the keys to living without dematerialized bones. Studies show that bone mass and bone strength increase even in older women with diseased bones, provided they take up weightlifting. Weight training increases testosterone activity, causes a surge in growth hormone release, and stimulates the production of insulin growth factors, all of which have a positive effect on bone growth. Osteoblasts have testosterone receptors and require testosterone to form new bone. Even 5 minutes of moderately intense weightlifting or body resistance activity, such as gymnastics, can cause a measurable increase in testosterone production and the anabolic flux required to preserve skeletal tissue. There's a connection between muscle and testosterone and bone mass. Based on evidence derived from research in human mineral biochemistry and positive feedback from hundreds of clients, I recommend taking a relatively high dose of elemental calcium and magnesium about 1/2 to 1 hour prior to sleeping. By high, I mean about 1,000 milligrams of calcium and maybe 500 milligrams of magnesium. Dose loading in this manner helps prevent what they call nocturnal bone resorption, as mineral blood plasma levels rise in relation to their gradual absorption through the night. A rise in blood calcium shuts off parathyroid hormone release, and the added magnesium stimulates osteoblast activity. Of course, both these minerals have a calming effect that can be enhanced using other nutrients such as vitamin B6 or inositol, niacin, and botanical remedies like kava-kava or passion flower. So when you load at night, it helps sedate and calm your nervous system. It also elevates calcium and magnesium levels in the blood, and that prevents the body from accessing the skeletal matrix for calcium because there's plenty in the blood. Makes sense. The practice of lying or sitting down for long periods, as is common when watching TV or sleeping, increases the risk of mineral leaching from skeletal tissue. When standing in an erect position, supporting muscle groups must contract to oppose the downward force of gravity. Lying in a horizontal position allows these same muscles to relax, thereby removing the tension required to initiate growth chemistry in the bone matrix. Obviously, rest is essential for recovery and growth. So once again, we are reminded that a balance of recreational and strenuous activity, coupled with adequate rest and relaxation, is an important factor in the bone wellness formula. A complete multiple mineral formulation, which includes a wide range of macro minerals and trace elements, is preferable to single doses of isolated calcium or even calcium with magnesium and vitamin D. There's a lot of people out there just taking calcium or just taking calcium magnesium with D. There's other minerals that are major players in the game, and without them, you cannot build strong, healthy bones. Take the mineral complex throughout the day with protein shakes or meals, and then load at nighttime with your calcium and magnesium. For better absorption and assimilation into the cell, emphasize minerals bonded to things like picolinic acid. What comes to mind is zinc picolinate, or aspartic acid, such as magnesium aspartate. Other good forms include Krebs cycle intermediates, such as malic acid, which when combined with calcium forms calcium malate, or when a mineral is bonded with citric acid, forming something like chromium citrate. Carbonates, gluconates, and lactates also provide various quantities of mineral value. Just read the label on the bottle to determine the elemental provision. Evaluate the quantity of the mineral only, as opposed to the compound, which is the mineral plus the mineral salt. Some compounds provide more salt than mineral, and certain salts are better transported than others. And by salt, I don't mean table salt. I mean the organic acid that the mineral is attached to, like, say, citric acid is referred to in chemistry as a salt. Even at the best of times and in the ideal gastrointestinal environment, minerals from food or supplements are poorly absorbed. Chelated minerals are also acceptable, provided the chelate is a function of high-quality amino acid bonding. Minerals work synergistically with each other and influence nerve tissue receptors, creating a sedative and tranquilizing effect. The dry mass and principal structure of a human body is made mainly out of protein, about 50 to 60%, fatty acids or fat, 35 to 55%, and minerals, 2 to 5%. Minerals enter into our composition. The quantity of each varies depending upon your physical shape, fitness condition, and diet. Carbohydrates fuel the machine, but they are not a principal function of human structure, excluding the fact that glycoproteins play an extremely small role in structure, and glycogen, stored in muscle and the liver, isn't really part of their structure, neither is water. In other words, we're not made out of carbohydrates, the stuff that everybody's eating, like in a frenzy. They're like gasoline, I call them biological gasoline, and they fuel the fire of our metabolism. If you eat too much carbohydrates and you have a relatively slow metabolic rate, you're going to get fat. And so one of the first concerns with body composition management is quantity and quality of carbohydrate intake. Carbohydrate modification or reduction combined with a balanced exercise regime often reduces body fat, but insufficient intake of essential amino acids, fatty acids, and minerals will compromise your body structure even with plenty of carbs in the diet. So you can eat lots of plants and pasta and yams and squash, but if you don't have enough protein and minerals, you're still going to dematerialize, even though you got lots of energy to move the machine. It will begin to fall apart because the raw materials that go into its composition are not provided exclusively in carbohydrates. Your structure is the foundation of health, so one of your objectives is to prevent it from falling apart. So make sure you consume the things you need ahead of the things you want. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Woody Allen. Sex between a man and a woman is a wonderful thing, provided you get between the right man and the right woman.